Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Podfather. My name is Alex, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host,
Jordan.
We haven't recorded in, like, over
quite
a
some
month.
Time.
Over a month?
We're a little rusty, perhaps.
What was the last one that we actually recorded?
The Gentleman, which we recorded, start of the year.
Oh, that wasn't too long ago.
It was
like a month ago, but I thought it might have been December. So we saw The Gentleman on New Year's Day, didn't we?
We certainly did.
Now we're here. We've had two episodes in between now, and then we had our sort of triple feature episode.
Two episodes, but five movies have been added to the list.
What? Really?
Yep. Bad Times.
Yeah. True.
Old Man and the Gun, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and our new lowest that we can finally shit on as much as we want because now the episode's out. The Hustle. Three.
Oh, is it a score of three?
Score of three.
Oh, my God. I can't even remember. We had some of our mates listening to that. Jack and Mitchell liked that episode
quite
a lot. Shout
out Jack and Mitchell.
Because they're quite into those films. Well, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, at least. Today, we're going to be talking about Uncut Gems, which I'm very excited to talk about. Are you excited to talk about
it? I'm very excited to talk about it.
That's good. That's a bit of foreshadowing for you.
Whether or not I liked it is a different story, but I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure whether you're going to like it. That's kind of what I've been thinking about for the last 12 hours. Before that, though, we're going to have a quick little chat about the Oscars.
Yeah.
Because we're going to drop this. We're recording this on a Sunday. The Oscars are going to be happening live about 24 hours from now.
Yeah, it's slightly less than. Today, the 9th of Feb, except the States time.
This will be out on the morning of for the Australian listeners. So you can have a bit of a listen on your way to work or the way to uni or whatever, get your Oscar fix and then complain about all the results.
All right. So we're just going to, like last year, we sort of did a – was it last year? Yeah, it would have been. We did a couple predictions.
No, would it for the Oscars or yeah. for – no, we did it like 2 years ago.
Was it 2 years?
Or maybe like 3 years ago.
When I got them all right.
It would have been for the Oscars 2017. Yeah.
Gee,
no, 2018. Weird. 2 years ago. 2 years ago.
Jesus. Oh, when
Gary
Oldman won.
You did really well. Yeah. You did really well. Okay.
Gosh, time flies.
We're going to do another
when
one.
You're
yeah,
not
we're
recording
try
a podcast.
And see how you go this year. Firstly, actually, can I ask you, so for Best Picture, which is, you know, the one that people care about the most, I've seen nearly all of them. Have you seen all of them?
I haven't seen all of them. I haven't seen Ford versus Ferrari, and I haven't seen 1917.
Ooh, that's interesting because I haven't seen 1917 either. I haven't seen Ford vs. Ferrari and I haven't seen Little Women. But the interesting thing about that is 1917, I feel like that's the one that's getting all the buzz and all the like, oh, best picture, this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about that quickly because I remember we both saw a trailer for it, I think, together at least once, maybe twice. And you didn't seem to be particularly interested.
No, I'm not.
And when I saw the trailer, I wasn't really interested either. I was like, oh, okay, cool. This looks good. I'd like to see it. But I didn't think it was like – all I could think about was like Dunkirk. And I was like, it's not going to be better than Dunkirk. But I've had friends who have seen it and it's getting a lot of attention. And I've sort of read and listened to some stuff about the behind the scenes and I'm like really intrigued about it now. What do you think?
I mean, if it wins, I will see it.
But you'll wait until it wins.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to.
If it doesn't
I'm not going
to
see it between now and then.
If it doesn't win, you're not going to see
I
it?
I can't be bothered. Not okay. That that's a great barometer for whether or not I should see a movie, but frankly, I'm not that interested in seeing it. If I'm going to see it, I want to see it at the cinemas.
Yeah.
So if it wins, that's my impetus to actually go and watch.
Well, I think I might go and – because we still have I've got a free IMAX from that time.
Oh,
that we
I
went.
Still do too.
So maybe we can go and see it for free.
Maybe.
Best Picture, 1917, Ford vs. Ferrari, Joker, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, The Irishman, Little Women, Jojo Rabbit, Marriage Story. What's your pick?
I think like you said, 1917 seems to be the one that's edging out in front at the moment. I'm going to say Parasite.
Wow. That'd be pretty incredible if it won.
Yeah, I really want it to win.
For me, see, the problem is, like, you know, I'm kind of tossing up between Hollywood and The Irishman, mostly, I would say.
Is that you want to or that you think will?
Oh, shit, are we doing want to or think will?
Well, I'm going Think Will and with a dash of Want To with mine.
See, I'm going to go with what I want because okay. I don't think I'm as good at, you're very good at like, that's why you did so well last time is because you know what will happen. You've kind of got your fingers into the film industry or the predictability of the Oscars and things like that, which,
but this is, you know, more, who are you rooting for?
I'm going to root for, I'd like to root for Parasite or I'd like to root for Parasite and probably Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, actually. But I think The Irishman deserves it.
Okay.
There you go.
There you go. Actor in a leading role. I've seen all of these performances, which is nice. Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory. Good. Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Adam Driver in Marriage Story. Joaquin Phoenix in Joker. And Jonathan Pryce in The Two Popes. I think Joaquin is going to walk away with it.
Yeah, but you really don't think he deserves it, right?
I mean, it's just such a boring choice. Like Gary Oldman when he won.
What did he win for?
For Winston Churchill in The Darkest Hour.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really boring choice. I think the braver choice would be a much more understated performance like Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory.
That's my pick. That's my fave out of these, I think. 100%.
Or even a more comedic turn in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from DiCaprio. Which I think is a better performance than he had in The Revenant, which he won for. Oscars suck.
Well, but I mean, has Joaquin won this category before?
Best leading. I think maybe.
Because I think it goes back into a little bit of what we were talking about on the Joker episode, which was you were never really here. Much better performance from him, I think. And it's a similar film.
Oh, no, he's just been nominated for Best Actor 3 times.
So if he...
Twice for Best Actor and once for Best Supporting.
So do you think if he wins this, it'll be a little bit like the Revenant thing of like, oh, you know, he deserves one for his career. This is the right time to give him one.
Yeah.
Which is kind of not in the spirit of how awards should work.
It shouldn't work like that, but it's how it does work.
It's frustrating. I would give it to Antonio. Who's your pick, Antonio?
My favorite performance Banderas. Out of those. Yeah, I think so. But I think Joaquin will win.
Ugh. And then we'll have to talk about The Joker more.
No, we won't.
Your favorite movie. Harley Quinn's out now.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we should go see that with our IMAX voucher instead.
Best actress, leading actress. Charlize Theron, Bombshell, which we might be seeing tomorrow night.
Yes.
Renee Zellweger, Judy, Cynthia Erivo, Harriet, Scarlett Johansson, Marriage Story, Saoirse Ronan, Little Women.
I've only seen two of these.
Only seen one of them.
So, I mean, we can't really do a fair... I mean, we could do what the Academy voters do and only see two of the performances and still vote in the category.
How do you know that happens?
Because that's just what happens. Like, they talk quite openly about it. A lot of actors and directors and whatever, they say, if you haven't seen all the movies in a category, you shouldn't be able to vote in the category.
100%.
But people do.
Well, I vote for ScarJo then.
I think who will win? You know what? I reckon...
What's Harriet?
It's about Harriet Tubman. We do love Cynthia Erivo. We talked about her at length in one of our episodes that just came out.
Very true.
In terms of who will win, you know what? I think it'll be Scarlett Johansson or Renee Zellweger. But Judy was one of those movies where the movie wasn't very well received. It's just a performance that everyone's talking about. But I think because Scarlett Johansson's also nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Jojo.
She is.
So
she is.
I think she'll win one of them, which I think is stupid. She wasn't that good in that movie.
Really?
She wasn't as good as any of the kids. Like, she was fine. Yeah. Like, she's a great actor, but Oscar
performance. Why aren't the kids nominated?
I don't know.
They aren't nominated for any of it. That sucks.
Well, it's hard when, like...
And is there... Okay, is there a limit to... So, Best Picture has, what, nine films.
Yeah, it's been 10 in the past.
Best Actor and Actress only have five. Is that, like, a rule?
Yeah, five in the other categories. It used to be 5 Best Picture noms as well, but they've extended it to up to 10.
But they don't have to do 10.
No.
I feel like it should be... Anyway, moving on. Best director.
Best director. Okay, so...
Best director, I think, should be Bong Joon-ho.
Yes.
100%. Not having seen 1917, but all of the other ones, like Marty, Todd, Quentin, I didn't think they were really doing anything they hadn't really done, you know? Like, they were all, well, some of them were great films, but Parasite, for me, I mean, I haven't seen his other films, but just because it's so different to the other ones and it's, like, really good.
I think I would love for Parasite to win Best Director. But in terms of who will win, well, I don't know. Everyone does love Parasite.
The way that that film went from, like, kind of funny and cool to, like, really scary for, like, 30 seconds to a minute, then back. Like, the tonal changes in that film I've never experienced.
Well, I reckon Sam Mendes might be in with a shot, though, just because everyone's like, oh, one shot.
Yeah, I really want to...
And that's what people will be thinking about when they vote for this category. They'll be like, oh, yeah, what a brave choice.
I really want to talk more about... The problem is I wish I had seen 1917 because I'd like to talk more about the whole one-shot thing, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So I don't really have much I can say, but it's something that I think I would want to talk about because, yeah, people are, like, really impressed by it. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's impressive and it's, like, takes a lot of effort, but it's not, like, out of the realm of possibility if you plan for it.
Yeah.
And it seems like the way they've done it in this film is exceptional from what I can tell. But I don't think that's not the wowing factor for me. I think that's my pre-thoughts going into that film. I think other things about it would be more interesting. Maybe Todd Phillips will get it for recreating two Martin Scorsese movies.
Nah, he should have won for Hangover 3, so it's overdue for him.
All right. So we'll revisit that after the Oscars
and
see what you got right. See if you can get a perfect
see what happens.
Perfect run again.
I'm just so unexcited for these Oscars.
Are there any awards that you do like?
I don't know. I like some of the more specific ones. Like, I think like the SAG awards are interesting because it's just the actors like voting on performances.
Yeah.
Or even something like the Independent Spirit Awards where it's just like the indie films and there's less of this sort of like, you know, the big bullshit. But I don't know. I used to be super into all the awards shows and now I'm just not, you know.
Do you think, like, what could they change about the Oscars or, like, the premier award show for films that would make you more, like, does it need to be a different voting, a different system, you know, like...
I think they should only...
Is it just dated?
They should only nominate the movies that I like and any movie that I don't like shouldn't be nominated and then I would like it again. Like, I'm kidding, but also, like, straight up, if you know, if Joker wasn't in there, I'd be like, oh... Really interesting.
I love that.
You got to be honest sometimes. Well, speaking of honesty, I've got a good honest biscuit for us today.
It's time to talk about biscuits. Yeah, it's honest time.
We got a savory. We got shapes. We got original shapes. We got chicken crimpy shapes.
Now, I've got a confession because I feel like we've been to like a picnic or two lately. Maybe it was your birthday picnic or a barbecue or two lately where people were talking. I mean, it's a pretty common conversation in Australian lunch circles, shapes and the flavours. And people were talking about chicken crimpy.
Yeah.
Chicken crimpy. I don't think I've ever had one of these.
Oh, wow. This is an exciting day.
I really don't think I've ever had one of these. This is a value pack as well. Is it bigger?
Yes, you can go. There's... at Aldi.
Promo.
Yeah, I no longer work at Aldi, by the way. I realized in one of our other episodes that we've just released, I'm talking about, I've just started working at Aldi. I was there a month. Fuck Aldi. But also, great deals, great value.
Value pack. Okay, chicken crimpy. Cheers.
What do you think?
You're already on board.
See, I think for whatever reason, I always had the chicken into biscuits, which...
Like the ones that look like drumsticks?
Yeah. And that's... I don't know who makes those.
Nabisco.
Right. And they had a whole line of like inner biscuit things.
But now they don't. And the boxes sort of popped out. They had little creases.
Yeah.
And you could pop them out so they were bigger so you could get more of a handful. That was innovative.
But I think that... The chicken inner biscuits had a very sharp flavour.
Mm-hmm.
These have a far more complex and wide palate
mm-hmm.
for me.
They are good and they're really Moorish because they're almost not, I think they're almost not flavoursome enough.
Mm,
so you keep wanting to buy, like eat them because you want to try to get that first hit again.
But that's what's good about it because the problem with like artificial chicken flavouring is that like if there's too much of it, it can be pretty gross. Or it's like too salty, too, like I said, too sharp. Whereas this leaves some to be desired, which works in this format.
These biscuits, like they come in the little small packs and that's good. That's a perfect amount. If I ate this whole box, I would feel really shit. However, if you have a bit of hummus, delicious. Bit of peanut really? Butter. Because these are kind of plainish, you know. They're great
they're
with other
things.
They're
still pretty chickeny.
Nah, they're just trust me. Bit of hummus or a bit of peanut butter.
Peanut butter?
Yeah.
Hummus and peanut butter are very different things.
I know, but you can have both of them with toast.
Yeah, okay.
Or you carrot. Can
have both with inner biscuits. Chicken crimpy.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking score-wise?
I give that like a strong 8.
An 8?
Solid 8.
Well, I'm going to go...
I could eat those for days.
7? So that's 7.5. It's the only thing that's got 7.5.
Wow.
It sits above the ginger nut on 7. Definitely deserves that. And a little bit below Teddy Bear Biscuits original on 7.625.
I like the ginger nuts.
And if you're going to have a 7.5 biscuit, you'd want to watch a 7.5 movie such as Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels or The Lavender Hill Mob. Oh, that was a good movie, wasn't it?
That was a good movie. Where did The Gentleman go again?
Or also Bonnie and Clyde. The Gentleman...
Bonnie and Clyde's a pretty good film.
Went to... got 5.
Yeah, okay.
It's currently sitting equal 57th.
And you know what? The Gentleman is now out in the US, I think, because it came out... Like late Jan.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard a peep about it. No one seems to give a shit. So I think we all
got relegated
we were right
to January.
On that one.
So
yeah.
That's death for a movie.
It's over. Don't watch it. We should delete the episode. It's not worth it. Just watch Lock, Stock on repeat. I'm like I said, I'm a little bit nervous about what you think. Because I think this is the kind of one that could go either way for you, actually. Seriously, in either direction. It's either going to be really good or really bad.
So, I mean, I heard good things going into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Sandler's best performance in years.
Can we park there for a second?
Because
I just wanted to say that, and let me know what your experience is, but I feel like, everyone loved Adam Sandler in the 90s. He had some great comedy films. Mm-hmm. We, last year, saw Punch Drunk Love, which... I want to talk about that later because I think his performance is a little bit similar. That's a great film. 50 First Dates, yeah, great film. You know, classic little rom-com. And then I was looking through his filmography. I think around the time of You Don't Mess with the Zohan, he kind of had a bit of a trough, a bit of a downward spiral.
And like in terms of his public image.
And this is the thing, his public image was... For the best part of the 2010s, people were like, Adam Sandler, he sucks. He's so last decade. Who likes him anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And I always was puzzled by that because I was like, everyone used to love him. And quite frankly, I've always liked him. I think he's funny. Mm-hmm. He's a good Jew. He's got really great humor. Sure, he's probably made a bunch of movies that are like just shitty comedies that no one really wants to care about anymore. But like, I've always kind of defended him.
Yeah.
And when Uncut Gems came out, mid last year it premiered, and then like it went into some cinemas overseas at the end of last year. Everyone was like, yeah, Adam Sandler's
the
back.
The Sandman.
It's the best performance in years, la, 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 la. And I was like, why is the film world, I guess it's mostly the Twitter world, why are they so like quick to just, you know, I don't like that.
Well,
it's like they never hated him. And I'm like, come on, guys, you all hated him.
No, I think they love to have, it's like the prodigal son returning. And it's like, remember the reconnaissance? Everyone loved that when he started making serious movies.
So you think it's they like that it's a return to form?
Yeah, it's a return. Because they did like him and then they hated him, but now he's back, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the narrative of this movie, certainly. And it is his best performance since Punch Drunk Love, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it.
You didn't like You Don't Mess With the Zohan?
I didn't see it, but I loved
that movie.
I loved Uncut Gems.
You loved it?
I loved it. I watched it this morning.
So glad we got there.
Slightly hungover from the tequila pineapple juices I was drinking last night.
Yum. Hungover is probably not the worst state to watch this film in, actually.
No, it was good. I was very stressed out. What was your first impression? When did you watch it last night?
I watched it last night. I loved it as well. I really, really loved it. Stressed out is a good way of putting it. Stressful film. Very different film. I think because I saw Parasite on Wednesday and this last night. So I feel like I've seen two very, you know, different films. They're both not, obviously Parasite's a Korean film.
Yeah, but there's like really unique voice that you don't often get to see.
Yes. And both of these films are not Hollywood-y, you know?
Yeah.
And this was really good because it's got all of the, if you just had the blurb or the synopsis, I mean, Adam Sandler, you know, it's a crime film. It's about New York. Like it's very Hollywood-y sounding.
Yeah.
And I really avoided anything about it intentionally, but it subverts expectations, I think, the whole time through. And it feels very different, feels very refreshing. It wasn't like any film I'd ever really seen, particularly any film in this setting with this kind of story. Like it was very, very different.
Well, I've never seen anything the Safdie brothers had done before. I really want to, because on Netflix at the moment, the picture before this with Robert Pattinson, Good Time.
My suggestion is actually that we do that next.
Fuck yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do anything that you tell me to. Yeah, I'm really keen to watch that movie. I just really liked the way, the feel of the movie, the vibe of the movie. The story of the movie is great, sure, but in different hands, it could just be any run of the mill.
Like, imagine if this was a Guy Ritchie film.
Oh,
like you can imagine what that would have been like, right? And it would have been probably like really boring and like really caricature-y and trying really hard. This didn't try hard at all.
No. It was, the cast is incredible, sure, but it's where the camera is. The camera does things that the camera doesn't normally do, you know, and the music was sort of kind of too over the top at times, like overpowering, but that just added to this sense of dread. And like, you know, sometimes you watch a movie and you just forget you're watching a movie. You're just so immersed in the narrative of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
No. I was so aware I was watching a movie the whole time, but in a positive way.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of putting it. I actually agree with you because I couldn't, like you said, the music, and like I actually couldn't stop thinking about the sound mixing because it was so jarring. Like it was kind of at first hard to hear what they were saying, and then like, you know, because there's so many scenes where like three things happen really quickly and the camera and the audio, it all cuts between them in this way where you feel like you're kind of there. But on paper, like when you think about it, on paper, especially with the audio, like all they've done is just kind of turn everything up in a funny way.
Yeah.
Like a really basic way of explaining how this movie sounds is like there's a lot of background noise, there's a lot of music, there's a lot of dialogue. All in the mix, like at the same levels, basically. And when you say that, you'd think to yourself, well, that wouldn't make for an enjoyable film. And on one hand, it's actually not necessarily enjoyable to watch, but that's part of what's good about it.
Yeah, because it's not like a pleasant story. It's about a very unpleasant man who gets into some very unpleasant situations. and, you know, treats people very unpleasantly. And it's quite an unpleasant experience to watch.
It's kind of an unpleasant experience.
But that
but like, I love
that. It's incredible.
That.
Because movies shouldn't always be, you know, just, oh, like a nice warm hug, which is sometimes really nice. Sometimes you just want Paddington 2. But, or sometimes...
Your favourite film.
Or sometimes you want Popcorn Fest. Go and watch a Marvel movie where you know exactly what's going to happen. But sometimes you want to be challenged when you go and see some art, you know? And that's what this is.
Oh.
It's a fucking piece of artwork.
It's a piece of artwork.
It's a gem. It's an uncut gem. No, it is though.
Wow.
I just loved it. And I think it is. It's rough around the edges, but there's so much beauty in it. Just like the titular gem.
It's the whole damn thing. It's a metaphor, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Do you think it would be, you know, too cliched of us considering the response, the online response, for this to top the Podfather charts at the end of this episode? Would we just be hopping on the wagon if that happened?
Oh, I won't. It won't top the charts.
I don't know. I'm feeling pretty high about it.
Okay. So I want to... I'm clearly very excited about it. Like, there's movies I'd rather watch again, and there's movies that I think are better. But the fact that it was different is what I'm so excited about.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I think it's easy for that too. And maybe this is part of the response of the film, is that it's very easy to, when you see something different, for that to be, especially because Hollywood is so, it can be so repetitive. I mean, I'd like to think it's getting better over time. I'd like to think it is, but then when you see, I mean, when you look at, like, you know, the grungy, edgy films of this year, last year, you know, like Joker and Uncut Gems, I mean, it's pretty clear which is, like, actually edgy and grungy and cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The other one is just, like, Joker is, like, what Hollywood has spat out trying to be something like Uncut Gems. You know what I mean?
SNL did a bit a couple of weeks ago where they were talking about the Oscar movies and how Joker is just about white male rage. And I thought that was kind of funny. And then they talked about The Irishman for a little bit. And they talked about how that was just about white male rage. That's such a... That does such a disservice to Marty's picture.
Yeah.
Because that's not what it's about at all. It's about aging and dreams that you've lost and loyalty and all of that shit that we talked about at length. You can hear that in our episode on The Irishman. However, you could quite easily say that about this movie. So I think it's a really regressive way of looking at movies, because it's about so much more than that. This movie is about greed and desperation and also it's not. Also, it's just about a fucking shit dude.
Yeah, it's like it's also like about real life.
Yeah,
like
it also doesn't have to be anything.
It doesn't have to be anything. And actually, one thing that I kind of liked, I feel like for the first half of the film, I mean, the whole film, as we said, it's like you're there with him and you're kind of going on this journey, and then all of a sudden it's over. But especially for the first half, it was really unclear what the narrative was, what the beginning, the middle, the end was. But you could feel it moving. And it's amazing that they kind of pulled that off in that kind of weird way, because, like, honestly, halfway through it, you're kind of like, what's actually happening? Like, what's the story here?
Mm-hmm.
But there is, like, a real through line with the story. There's definitely a story.
Yeah. Well, and what is a story? Let's tell the audience a little bit about it.
We can try and explain the story.
So Sandman plays...
The Sandman.
He plays Howard Ratner, who's like a jeweler in New York. And that's the movie. And he's got some big clients, but he's also got some big sharks breathing down his neck.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's sort of a bit of a swindler and a bit of a gambler. And he has a wife and kids, but he's also got a girlfriend that works for him. And he's just up to his neck in deception, deceit, and consequences, you know? And he's, like we've said, he's a very unpleasant character. He's just sort of fucking swears at people, fuck you, fuck you, fuck this, and he yells, and he's very unkind person. And so you shouldn't feel bad when bad things happen to him.
Yeah.
But because he is the protagonist.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
Which I love that.
Well, and I think there's a part of it because it is Adam Sandler and because you're so used to him playing lovable people that you instantly do want to be on his side, which I think is like, it's a really good casting choice for the film because like I said, you want to be on his side, but it takes a long time, I think, to realize that he's actually just a shit guy.
Yeah.
But even then, he's redeemable. He's
sweetly, slimily charming.
Yeah, he's sweetly, slimily charming.
Yeah, it's peculiar. And but they're not glorifying his behavior at all.
No.
That's a good thing about it. It's not, you don't watch this movie and go, I want to be like Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems. He's my hero. I'm going to start dressing like that now. And, you know.
Well, I do kind of want to get some clothes.
That's fair. But do you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to, like, base your whole identity around this bloke.
No.
So essentially, who's his big client? Kevin.
Kevin Garnett, who is a retired professional basketballer. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we should talk about. I watched a little interview with them on Kimmel last night after watching the film. Did a little bit of research, which is uncommon for me.
You really liked this movie. Wowee, you're putting work in.
Kevin Garnett, I think this is the first time he's acted.
Yep.
And apparently a lot of the other characters in the film weren't actors as well. So like the heavies, Arnold's dudes, I'm pretty sure they weren't actors. And they were Adam Sandler was talking about how, you know, the script would say, and now you hit Howie. And they had to kind of explain to them, it's going to be like a stage hit though.
Yeah.
And they were like, how do we do that? So, you know, there's people in this film that are actually thugs. There's people in this film who, the doctor was a real doctor at the beginning. So
doing the proctal.
Doing the colonoscopy. Exam. Yeah. Which we should talk about that in a minute. Kevin Garnett is a real basketball player.
Yeah.
And I can only assume that all of the footage that they showed were from
the real games.
Because
it's set in 2010.
Yes. No, 12.
12. Oh, okay.
The opening scene is 2010, then it goes 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Garnett's still playing. I think he retired in 2016. So he plays himself.
And he hasn't aged a day.
He hasn't aged a day, which works really well. And he was great, wasn't he? He was really,
really
good.
Really good.
He was really good.
Those basketballers show up in movies these days and they're often really good actors. Like there was that movie Trainwreck with Amy Schumer. And Hader. And Bill Hader's character is a sports doctor. And he has all these scenes with LeBron James.
No shit.
Yeah. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them. And LeBron was really funny in that movie. And I think LeBron is going to be in the new Space Jam. Isn't that right?
Yes. I think you're right. When's that? Is that coming like soon?
I guess they must be making it now.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I think Bugs Bunny has a pretty busy schedule at the moment. So I think now is the only window that they had.
No, but you're right. There must be something with basketballers and charisma. I mean, I think it's when you think about it, it's a pretty charismatic sport. Like there's a lot of like showmanship in the sport, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of fame in the sport. So it probably makes sense that they could make that transition.
Yeah.
But that being said, I mean, acting's no easy job.
But if it worked for Troy Bolton, it can work for anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My point proven. Yeah. And I think especially to Kevin Garnett's credit to go into a film like this, which sounds like it wasn't produced or shot super produced traditionally with, you know, actors that weren't actors. From what I can tell from the Safdie brothers, they seem to be doing things in their own little way. Like I don't think it would have felt like a regular movie set.
Yep.
Which maybe that is why it's such a good performance. You know, maybe that's part of it too. Maybe because they were comfortable and they were just kind of hanging out and they got to just kind of do it. So he's probably the main crux of the film because he comes into the shop on the same day that Howie receives the uncut gem, the titular uncut gem, and Kevin Garnett falls in love with it and it becomes his little like magic charm.
Yes.
Which I think is like a really cool plot device actually. And if it were another movie, it would have been told in a much more cheesy way, I think. But this one kind of made it, you know,
Yeah, like of course he needs the gem if he's gonna play well. Of course he does.
Of course he needs it. And like of course it's all wrapped up again in that sort of basketball of fame, and like of course he's like going to a jewelry shop to try and buy. I loved that the line where, you know, he's got like the diamond encrusted Furby dolls.
Yeah.
And he's like, I started this, I made this.
Gosh, it's a weird movie.
It's so weird.
And also, talking about the supporting cast, there's some other actual actors in there as well.
The Weeknd?
Lakeith Stanfield. The Weeknd, that was his first performance as well. which was funny because it really made the whole thing feel like it was when it was set. And he hasn't really aged either.
I know.
They made his hair look the same as it used to. And,
yeah. It was really good period piece, actually.
Yeah, really good.
Although I'm not sure what time how his clothes are from. They're from multiple generations.
Yeah, but I kind of love that. But Lakeith Stanfield, who's an excellent actor, he was in Knives Out not too long ago in a supporting role.
Which?
He was one of the side cops.
Uh-huh.
He's also in a movie called Sorry to Bother You, which is one of my favorite movies.
Who did
he
play in Uncut Gems?
He played the guy that brought Kevin into the jewelry shop with the dreads.
Oh, yeah, he was in Knives Out.
Yeah.
Oh, he was great.
And he was in Get Out.
He was great.
His career is excellent. He's also in a movie with Brie Larson called Short Term 12, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
His career is just an excellent one. I strongly recommend you look at everything he's ever done because he is just like an excellent supporting character, but also when he does sort of more... Like he had that movie Sorry to Bother You and he was the lead character in that and he was excellent in that. And he makes really interesting choices. He's got a really cool career. Check it out.
Yeah, no, he was great. And one thing that I liked about his character and his story, which is a good thing about the whole film, again, talking about how it's like not super Hollywood, I didn't find it to be very like spoon-feedy at all. Like you were finding out things as they happen to the characters, which is the right way to do storytelling. And I think that's kind of why the film's a bit jarring and confusing, because it's really not clear at the beginning, like who he's in debt to, why, what he's kind of like. And with, what was his name? The actor?
Lakeith Stanfield.
With his character, you don't find out until like, you know, towards the end, that how he's like already sold off all his watches, like all those little things, and you find out as he finds it out, which I think is really important to the pacing of the film. And again, like it's just not spoon feedy.
Yeah, it's not like, hi, this is the world we're in. This is his family. This is his girlfriend. It's just a day in their life, and you better catch up and hit the ground running, which is the best sort of movie, I think. Like. In that way, it did feel like a foreign film.
Exactly. Same with Arnold being his brother-in-law. Like that just kind of gets dropped on you as he's at dinner with him for Passover. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. That's what felt like a foreign film. And I think you call that exposition, right? That's the right word. I think that's the lesson that we need to keep pushing if we can do anything about it. Hollywood to try and like tone down on, like do more of this stuff where you find things out as the characters find it out, live within them a bit more. Because not only is that more interesting, I think that'll help boost the world intelligence
spot on. I fully agree. Also, Idina Menzel plays his wife and she's quite good in that small role.
Has she been in anything else? Because she was familiar.
She is in Frozen. She was on
Broadway. I saw her in that.
In Wicked for a long time. She was in Glee a little bit. She was also in Enchanted. Let me tell you what her film roles are like, because that's sort of... She's a very famous person. Yeah, she was the one that... do you remember that day where John Travolta was like, the wickedly talented Adela Dazeem? Do you remember that?
No, was that at an award show or something?
This was at the Oscars when Frozen was nominated for Best Song. And Idina Menzel was performing and John Travolta straight up butchered her name. It was one of the funniest things that's ever happened in the whole world.
Is he still bald?
I think she's actually going to sing at the Oscars this year.
Wow.
Because of Frozen. Yes, he fully went bald at the suggestion of Pitbull.
Pitbull's told him to go bald.
Yeah, he was like, just own it, dude.
Ah.
Yeah.
Go Pitbull.
Yeah, anyway. She was really good. And the girlfriend played by, Julia Fox. And she
Was Julia?
Yes. And Idina Menzel's character's name was Dina.
Ah. They kept it easy for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Adam Sandler can't remember anyone's names. yeah, Julia, the character, is excellent. The actor was excellent. She hasn't got many credits to her name.
Yeah, I think this is like her breakthrough role.
Yeah, she's only been in shorts, and now she's going to be in another movie, but that isn't finished yet. She was incredible.
Yeah.
And that character is a really interesting character. Like, it's basically Adam Sandler's mistress, and that could be a really boring character on paper, but she's really integral to the plot.
Yeah.
And his moral turmoil, and she's really complex because she's sort of got quite a lot of agency, but also like is in love with him.
Yeah, she's like blindly in love with him.
Yeah, and maybe actually it's the money.
Mm.
Who knows? But it doesn't seem like that always. And really interesting relationship because he's like an asshole, but she's fallen for him. You can't help who you fall for.
You can't help who you fall for.
I've learned that the hard way, Alex, in my life. You just can't help it. But you know what? You have to deal with the consequences.
This film's helped you a little bit personally, a little bit of love therapy for you?
No.
Seeing Julia's struggles?
You should see my new butt tattoo.
Question though, and maybe this comes up to the first complaint about the film, or mm-hmm. maybe the only complaint. We don't really get a lot of backstory for maybe why she's blindly in love with him. Like, we don't really see that. There's no room for that to see that develop. But, like, I sort of wonder why she's so in love with him and why she is willing to kind of, like, is it maybe it's for the money? But, like, I mean, he doesn't. One thing that's good about the film is, like, this is just a couple of days. But you get the impression that this is, like, what his life's like 24/7 anyway. Yeah. So even though this is only a short period of time, I'm sure this was happening a month ago and it would have been happening in the future had the ending not happened. So he is he rich? Is he not rich? It's hard to tell. You know what I mean?
If you look at his apartment, because you do see slightly into some of the other apartments on his floor, and they're just basic apartments.
True.
His is decked out. It's painted. That's true. He's got expensive furniture. He's got expensive tastes. Yeah, he's rich. But he's like the sort of rich that...
He's rich, but he never actually has any money, right?
Yeah.
Like he's kind of... He's been able to amass all of the things that you need, but at the end of the day, he's always trying to pay someone else back, which comes down to the gambling. So the question is like, why is she so blindly in love with him?
I don't care, to be honest.
You happy with it?
I'm happy with it. I'm happy with it. Because it's not like she's blindly in love with him and she thinks of him as a saint. Because you don't get that impression at all.
No.
And that would be an issue. But no. They've clearly got a tumultuous relationship for a myriad of reasons. I'm kind of cool with it.
And she must be into the lifestyle.
Yeah, and she works for him too.
Yeah. Now, is she doing a similar thing that the other guy is doing in terms of trying to bring in clients and or like trying to get... Because like she steals the Weeknd's necklace at one point, right? Basically.
I don't know. There was so much going on in this movie.
Because you know how like he ends up selling the Weeknd's Michael Jackson necklace? I assume that she stole it for him. Yeah, she must have done. Yeah, you it's a little bit like... When it I don't think that song was released yet.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't have been, right? That came out in like... Oh, end of 2012?
Nah, when the Weeknd went
big?
Yeah, but... No.
What was that?
That song was like 2014, 2015.
What was the big song of the Weeknd in 2012?
I don't think we knew about him then.
When did he get big then?
For us, I think it was like 2015.
Really? Because Starboy came out in 2016.
Yeah, that was like not maybe like 2014, 2015. Because Starboy was shit.
Can't Feel My Face came out in 2015, Jesus.
Told you. But it's one of those songs where I feel like, yeah, you feel like it was always around, right?
Also, it's a very Jewish movie. Let's talk about that.
Oh, wow. I know.
You're probably more equipped to talk about it than I am.
It was so good. It was in that respect. Like, obviously, they do the whole Passover thing. I mean, like, and Jewish humor has been a big part of Adam Sandler's career, obviously. And the Safdie brothers are Jewish. So, yeah, you know, the thing about this movie is, like, it's not an Adam Sandler movie. He's just acting in it.
Yes. Which is great.
But there are a lot of moments that maybe the Safdie brothers are a little bit influenced by Adam Sandler in terms of their humor, because there's so much of this that feels like Adam Sandler did write it. Or, you know, that being said, if this had have been something that he'd written himself, I'm sure it would have been a bit cruder and a bit like lamer.
Yeah, like he would have had a scene where, you know, he got a colonoscopy or something.
He would have. Or wouldn't he have. Yeah, that's like what I mean. Like that, like
did feel like an Adam Sandler movie.
There were parts of it that felt like an Adam Sandler movie, even though it's not an Adam Sandler movie, which I think was really interesting. So I don't know whether that was like part of their plan a little bit.
Well,
with
they
the writing
it to
of
him
it
like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I heard that.
And then it was only when he saw Robert Pattinson's movie that he was like, "Oh, this would be a good career movie. I've been making. I haven't had a theatrical release since Pixels."
But no, yeah, very Jewish. And that helped for me to get engaged in it, because I obviously find that stuff so entertaining. And like, for Adam Sandler and for the Safdie brothers, I mean, like, you know, they weren't gangster jewelers, but like they grew up in those areas and I'm sure they knew people like that. Mm. I'm sure they knew people like that. And I'm sure that a lot of it, again, it feels really realistic. And I think a lot of it is realistic because it's probably based on real Jewish jewelers in New York who do crazy things. I'm not quite sure about importing the gem, uncut gem from Ethiopia. That might be a bit like wild, but the rest of it seems like super plausible, right?
Yeah. No, but even then, you know, you've seen Blood Diamond.
Never seen it.
Oh, well, I've only seen the first bit. I can't remember why. I think it was at school, but that happens, man.
Yeah.
The black market jewel trade is alive and well. Who's the bloke that did the music? Daniel Lopatin. It was a good score.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like, I mean, there was sort of that sort of vaporwave 80s stuff at the beginning and at points between it, which at first I felt could have been a bit cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
But it really kind of worked. And then a lot of the stuff during the film, like it wasn't, yeah, there wasn't like an awful amount of music. It was just kind of like thematic,
yeah,
tension building.
It was good.
Hair-raising franticism.
Well, he also did Good Time, the score for that. He also did The Bling Ring, remember with Emma Watson?
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that.
Sofia Coppola directed. That's a crime movie too. We could watch that.
We got to do that. What I really liked comparing his performance to Punch Drunk Love.
Yes.
Again, a film that he's just acting in, you know,
yeah.
This is a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. This is a Safdie brothers movie. I think that one of the keys to Adam Sandler is that if you actually just get him to just act, he can be really, really good. Like he's a good actor. I think part of the maybe problem with his career path is that he became one of those people who had to kind of make their own, not had to, but was, It became expected of him, I think, in the industry that he would make a movie and, you know, do that whole thing with Kevin James and David Spade and all, you know, yeah. It was like a crew, you know, it was a scene and it just kind of got a bit stale, right?
Yeah.
But if he's just acting, like in Punch Drunk Love, he plays a very anxious character. In this film, they're very different characters. This one's a bit more stressed and frantic, but those kind of emotions, anxiety, stress, erraticism, they're a little bit linked. So I think the characters are kind of comparable.
He does that anyway when he's in his movies that he's producing.
Yeah.
He does this. He's almost playing the same type of character. It's just framed differently because it's like it's not an Adam Sandler vehicle.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's a good way of putting
like,
it.
Like in Punch Drunk Love, the reason that movie is so like sad is because Adam Sandler's playing an Adam Sandler character in a movie that highlights how sad that is.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, he's a man child. Woohoo, happy Madison or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this guy's like, he needs therapy, serious therapy.
Yeah.
And similar in this movie.
Like, very similar in this film.
Except now he's older and a bit more grizzled and he's got fake teeth in. And but it's like, oh, dude, this needs, and it's not, this guy it's needs not, therapy. Yeah, he doesn't need to be dating Jennifer Aniston in a Netflix movie. He needs to go to a hospital.
And it's not sad because he needs therapy for different reasons. Like, it's not sad because he's like a little anxious guy who can't handle the world.
Yeah.
It's sad because he thinks he's king of the world, you know, but he's not. And actually, one of my favorite scenes is really at the end, where he ends up getting the money off Kevin Garnett for the Uncut Gem, which, by the way, is part of the story. He's trying to auction this thing.
Yeah.
He then gets into this conversation with Kevin about, he's sort of trying to calm Kevin down or change the subject. And he talks about how, oh, you know, look what the odds are against you guys on Vegas tonight. And we see this earlier in the film where he goes and puts like $24,000 on the Celtics. And then in this instance, he puts like $160,000 on the Celtics, which like is insane. And the fact that like people are allowed to do that baffles me. I feel like that should be illegal. But anyway, what a world.
What a world.
But in that scene, we see how he, and I think he acts this really well and it's written really well, the way that like, you know, for 80% of the film, he's not thinking about betting or gambling. That's not really part of his character until it's what he's thinking about. And then it's all he's thinking about.
He's only ever thinking about money.
He's only ever thinking about money, but he's not, like, in that moment, you see his, like, gambling brain turn on.
Yeah.
And I think they do that really well because that's how that kind of works.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably not something that until it's in your mind and then it's like, well, that's all he can do now.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to do it. And he goes to all this trouble instead of just paying it back
and then he'll be scot-free.
He's in the next room. He goes to all this effort to put a $165,000 bet on a game. And I think that was expertly done. Really interesting because I think in another movie they would say to you, oh, he's a gambler, oh, he won't stop gambling. But they never really say that.
Yeah, like,
you just see it.
It'd be like, you've got a serious problem.
Yes.
Look at yourself.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Adam Sandler.
Yeah, but it wasn't like that. It was just more like, oh, shit, this guy. And it was more powerful this way because you realized it. You were like, oh, yeah, he's like got a really bad problem.
Yeah, and this movie is kind of incredible, particularly the last like half hour for a lot of reasons, not least of which it made me care about a basketball game. But
well, you do care about things a lot more when you got money on it.
Yeah, well, exactly. But it's just like, you know, the movie's 2 hours and 15 minutes. But that last half hour simultaneously feels like a minute long and 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just so jam-packed with, like, anxiety. Oh, I kind of love it. It's almost horror movie-esque.
Okay, so then anything you don't like?
It's a good question. I can't pinpoint it because it was really expertly handled. In lesser filmmakers' hands, there could have been characters or plot points that I didn't think were handled well, but they handled everything well.
In lesser filmmakers' hands, I think it could have been awfully cheesy.
Yeah.
It could have gone in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
It could have been really lame. I mean, when you first see the image of Adam Sandler in this getup, I mean, you think to yourself, is this a parody? Like, is this another Zohan type thing?
Yeah.
Is this like a Borat situation?
You know? He did seem almost Sacha Baron Cohen-y. And apparently they were going to give him the role at one point too.
You know, he probably...
And Harvey Keitel was even considered at one point.
As Howie?
Yeah.
Wow, that would have been different.
It would have been a different movie, yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen maybe could have done it as well, actually. Yeah. That doesn't seem too weird, but...
I'm glad it was the Sandman.
What did you think of the ending?
Oh, fucking awesome. So, spoilers, because you're just rooting for him by the end. You're really rooting for him, this fucking dickhead. And then he gets what's coming to him, and you're like, yeah, he deserved that.
Yeah.
Fucking prick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's go look into a gem again. You know, like, fuck yeah, I loved it. I loved the ending.
Well, it was the only
ending, but it was one of those things that filmmakers are so good. Like, you don't pull out a gun unless you're going to fucking use it. you know?
And there wasn't, yes, there wasn't any, there wasn't really any guns in the rest, of the film at all. It wasn't.
But also you didn't, it was still unexpected.
Yeah.
Because you're like, yay, everything's fine. Yeah, of course that was going to happen.
And so, well, so Howie gets shot and then Arnold gets shot as well.
Yeah.
And what I liked about that was, especially if we compare it to, you know, most of the films we've watched, like just classic gangster films, you never see the side men stand up for themselves, I guess.
Yeah.
Like they're always there to service the boss. And in this, again, really realistic, that guy who was the heavy guy for Arnold, he just had enough. He was like, fuck all of this and fuck you too.
Yeah.
Bam, bam.
Bam, which, bam.
Like, that's great.
Yeah.
More films should end like that.
Yeah.
It's more real.
Yeah. Well, it's like, to talk about Parasite for a little bit, that movie really takes a turn towards the end. People really get injured in a way that wouldn't happen in a standard movie.
Yes.
And I just love it.
Yep.
I love when violence in films is deployed well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not gimmicky, it's not cheesy, and it's unexpected.
We've come, you know, I mean, like, I think that was one of the big things with, like, Bonnie and Clyde was that, you know, the violence was so, at the time, full on. And it's interesting to see how far as well we've come from then. In that sort of like, that was a transitional period with violence in cinema. And I feel like, you know, we probably went too far down that path of just like bang, 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 blood, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And now we're into an era where I think, you know, kind of led, I guess it's hard to say it's led by Tarantino because he's so violent. But at the same time, like,
maybe he's in a response to Tarantino.
Well, but I feel like even his violence can be, I guess it depends on the film, but it's like refined violence, right? Where that's what's happening these days. It's less is more, but it's also like, how can we do it in an interesting way? And, you know, we can use amazing makeup and special effects that make it look really gross,
yeah,
in different ways as, yeah, well.
Or you can do what Lynn Ramsey did in You Were Never Really Here and hardly show it. You just see him with a, yes, fucking hammer, and, yes, then you see some bodies and it's so intense that you feel like you've witnessed brutal murders. But really, that's a really... just objectively, there's not much violence in that movie, and, yeah, yet it's somehow a super violent movie.
Yeah.
You know what? People, I love that. I love that because when it's deployed well, it's like, well, fuck yeah! It's like you don't get that in real life if you live a life like mine.
You don't get any violence.
No violence.
Are you looking for more violence in your life?
No, but that's why I got to see movies like this.
Okay, do you think we should give it a score?
I think we should give it a score.
You go first.
8.5. Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 9.5.
9.5? Well, that's a 9. That means it's equal second.
Wow. Isn't there a few things on 9?
There's heaps now. All right, so.
I kind of almost wanted to give it a 10.
Well,